Hi, everyone. This is your host, Michael Rubino. We're here for another episode of Mole Talks, and I'm very excited because today's guest is a special one. I have with me Andrew, the CEO and founder of Purity Coffee. And obviously, what's really interesting about Purity Coffee, for those that don't know, is they test their coffee for mold, mycotoxin exposure to make sure that the coffee that you're drinking is safe and healthy, which obviously everybody on this listening to this podcast is going to be highly interested in. But we have to explore and understand, Andrew, why that came about in the first place. What was your journey like and how was mold on your radar?
Yeah, I mean, basically, it really started coming about because my wife was having some health issues. So it was about 2012. I'd had a business in software in Latin America, and I sold that business, and we spent some time traveling. And then when we came back, she started getting some health issues. And, you know, I'm sure, as you know, it was difficult to pinpoint one of these things where she had very low energy, difficult of getting out of bed in the morning, and we couldn't figure out exactly what it was. But we were trying pretty much everything from, you know, changing her supplements to looking at mold as an issue in the house in terms of remediation to just, you know, really pretty much everything that she was doing to see how we can improve the quality of her health. And coffee became one of these things that she was relying on, you know, like most of us do. It was sort of a way to sort of give us that natural pure caffeine input so that you can motivate to do your, you know, do the things you need to do in the day. And so she was drinking a lot of coffee, and I'm English, and I was a tea drinker, and I never drank coffee. Very, very seldom would I drink coffee. And so I was, of course, trying to persuade her, you need to give up your coffee. I'm reading all this stuff about it's bad for you. And she was very resistant, to say the least, about giving up her coffee because, you know, she needed to get through her day. And so she sort of challenged me. She challenged me and said, look, I'm not giving up my coffee until you give me some really good validation on why I should. And so I started going to school about the health benefits of coffee and if it really was bad for you. And, you know, and what I found was the opposite was true. I met two professors at the Institute of Coffee Studies in Vanderbilt. And they just gave me this long shopping list of all the health benefits associated with coffee. And it just felt like it was just an amazing disconnect that people were not aware of the health benefits of coffee. But on the other hand, you know, a lot of people were trying to give up coffee. So I started to dig in deep in terms of what made a coffee good for you and what made a coffee bad in terms of what you should avoid.
And what did you find in that hunt, in that search? What makes coffee bad for you?
There's a long list of both good things and bad things. And so in a very simplistic way, the way I look at it is this, you know, it's about the presence of good things and the absence of bad things. So the presence of good things, coffee's one of the highest sources of antioxidants in the American diet. The amounts of antioxidants in your coffee ranges from crop to crop, harvest to harvest. So the only thing you can do is you have to lab test coffee from around the world and pick the ones that are highest in antioxidants. So the CGAs, the chlorogenic acids, things called trigonaline, there's quite a few compounds that we care about in coffee. That's the primary driver of the good things that you want in coffee. But the bad things, unfortunately, water is heavily used in the processing of coffee, and they don't have the same sort of food safety standards. So mold can turn into mycotoxins, which then turn into, you know, some of the things like ochratoxin A or some of the issues that people have with health, mast cell activation syndrome, histamine intolerance. So I'd say the main ones are this. The antioxidants are the positive. The negative that you need to avoid is you need to avoid mold and any coffee that's treated with pesticide. One of the things that I learned early on is that coffee is one of the most heavily treated crops on the planet, next to tobacco and cotton. And it's treated with a sort of pesticides that wouldn't be allowed in the US. But because it's produced in, let's say, Brazil or wherever, and then shipped to the US, there's not the same level of oversight. And the sort of pesticides like glyphosate and endosulfan and these sort of pesticides, I mean, just are very, very bad for you, even in minute quantities. So pesticides, mold, probably the two things you have to avoid. And then the coffee needs to be fresh.
Okay, so your wife's not feeling well. You're trying to get her to give up coffee. This creates a whole hunt on, you know, let me figure out what's good about coffee, what's not good about coffee. And then you then find out that mold and mycotoxins are a pretty big problem, including pesticides like glyphosate. And so what do you do from there?
Well, the first thing I did is there was a lot of work. It was about 18 months in research and development. And the two professors at the Institute of Coffee Studies introduced me to Dr. Adrien Farrar, who's one of the leading coffee experts in the world on coffee and health. I think I was asking them too much questions and they thought, okay, give him to the expert. And so I started working with Adriana really for those full 18 months, looking at every step of the process to say, if we were only driven by the health benefits of coffee, what decisions would we make? And so we looked at every step and we designed a protocol. And then 18 months later, we said, okay, let's find coffees that reach this standard. So we started sourcing coffee really from around the world and then lab testing it to see which ones were highest in antioxidants. And that happened to be that are also mold-free, mycotoxin-free, no heavy metals, all of the sort of criteria we were looking for. And then this was just at the end of 2016. We had our first bag of coffee and we went out and presented it. And it's really been really well received, particularly in the sense that people can feel it in their bodies.
That's amazing and inspiring, but I think we need to harp on the challenges here because, you know, I can't imagine that you just went out to the first coffee place that you saw and it happened to have been amazingly mycotoxin free and had really high levels of antioxidants. I'm imagining you may have seen some negative things in the industry and would love for you to kind of cover, you know, what you were seeing and how difficult it was to really, you know, source something that was safe.
Yeah, and we were actually a victim. This business may not have started had it not been for one issue that was resolved. So after the 18 months, we found this great coffee in Brazil, and I won't name names, but just a fantastic producer. They sold their coffee all over the world, just very high quality, regenerative agriculture. So I decided just to buy 10 sacks, which is, you know, sort of 600 kilos of coffee to run our first round. And when the coffee arrived, it was roasted based on a roasting protocol we designed at the University of Brazil to maintain the antioxidants. It was delivered to the house. We were super excited about it, my wife and I. And, you know, first sip of the coffee, it was horrible. I mean, it was horrible. You just could, I mean, it was really difficult to choke down. And we thought, you know, God, maybe this is healthy coffee. Maybe this is what happens when you make every decision based on health. It just doesn't taste good. After digging in a little bit deeper, the coffee that we were delivered was riddled with mold and mycotoxins. So basically the farmer had done what a lot of farmers do, which is they sell you a micro lot, so they sell you a lot, a sample, and then they actually, so you say, fantastic, I love this coffee, and then you order a larger lot, and they buy coffee from local farms that don't have the same standards. If they think that you're not experienced enough, and I absolutely fell into that category of not being experienced in coffee, they'll give you substandard coffee. So, you know, we were a victim of what we were worried about in the industry, which is mold and mycotoxins in coffee.
Wow. A little bit of coffee fraud going on there, huh?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Bait and switch. All right. So, you know, just going back to this, obviously, you know, you got in, you obviously knew what you were looking for. What makes coffee moldy in the first place? You know, is it the way they farm? Is it the way they store it? Is it the processing of it itself? You give us some insight on that.
There's a lot of times that mold can develop on coffee, and it's typically through bad sort of either picking practices or processing practices, and sometimes storing practices. You know, when the coffee is delivered in its green bean. So, give you a couple of examples of how mold develops. So, when you pick coffee, you get a coffee tree. Some of the cherries on the tree are ripe and they're bright red. Some of them are underripe, and that would be green, and some of them are black. Well, one of the problems with industrial farming, which is the way that the majority of coffee is picked, is it's much more cost effective to pick all the coffee and then sort the coffee afterwards from the coffee that's ripe to the coffee, sort away the overripe or the underripe. So these big tractors go down between these coffee trees and they pick and shake all the trees and basically put all the coffee beans on the ground. They're picked up and they're sorted industrially. The issue is that the black beans are overripe, meaning that they're moldy, they've been on the tree too long. if the coffee was hand-picked and hand-selected, you'd only pick the perfectly ripe fruit. But because it's mechanically picked, what it's doing is it's picking the overripe fruit. And it's like taking a moldy strawberry and throwing it in a vat of fresh strawberries. The next day, all of the strawberries are moldy. So the very fact that they're being cost-effective for them through industrial farming and industrial picking, that creates mold in the coffee. And once it's created, it's very difficult to get rid of.
Sure.
Another example, which I always found was interesting, I was visiting a farm in Brazil, and it was just a big pile of green coffee, which means that the coffee has been dried, it's been picked, it's been dried, it's ready now to be shipped for roasting, you know, in the US. There was a mountain of this coffee, and there was a worker who was just basically spraying the coffee with water. And I wanted to understand, well, why would they do that? What was the purpose of washing in this final stage? And he said, it's not so much washing, it's that there's a legally acceptable level of humidity in the coffee beans, and that the more water they can get the coffee to hold, the more that they can get for the coffee, because it's based on commodity pricing and weighting. So imagine this big sort of, you know, multi-ton pile of coffee. If you spray it with water, it absorbs water, and that means that they can sell it for 5% or 7% more than they would had they not have sprayed it. Of course, you've got this sort of moist coffee that then is transported for 2 months in sacks, you know, to its final destination. It was perfect before, it was perfectly dry, but by adding water because they could make more money, it's just another way that mold happens in coffee. And again, it's very sort of, I wouldn't say industry standard, but it's certainly something you have to watch out for.
Well, it certainly sounds like greed will be the death of us all.
That's right, unfortunately.
For 5 or 7% more, you know, we take a perfectly good bean and make it just unsavory,
absolutely
unhealthy. That's really rough. And so you obviously have been able to figure out how to do this properly and come up with your own protocols and processes, work with different farmers and things of that nature. And we talked a little bit offline. You now are buying farms, you're controlling that process. You know, it seems to me that, you know, to do what you're trying to do, the more control that you would have over the whole process, obviously the better. And I'm just curious to see the direction that you're heading in, and you know, how you're pioneering a new landscape of healthy coffee.
Yeah, and I think control is a small part of it, but I think more importantly, finding the right partners and giving them the business practices, the best practices that we've learned from lab testing coffee and looking at coffee through the lens of health. So we make every decision based on health. We lab tested coffee from around the world. We found the coffee is highest in antioxidants. But then we started over the years to recognize a trend. We recognized that the coffee that was grown in its natural environments, so it was grown, so there's certain monikers we would look for, things like Smithsonian bird friendly, hand-picked, hand-selected, shade grown. These were all indicators that the coffee wasn't industrially farmed. So no one would tell you that the coffee is industrially farmed, but if you could get labels to show that it was organically farmed, it's more likely to be higher in antioxidants. So we started just gravitating to farms that follow these organic regenerative farming practices. And now what we've done, and the reason we started to buy our own farms, is because we realized that we can do other things that the farmers wouldn't do with inputs on soil level to encourage more antioxidants in the coffee, chlorogenic acids. It's all about building the root system and building the soil so that that feeds the plant rather than fertilizers and pesticides, which are all just directly on the plant, but you're not managing the soil. So we're trying to create best practices for what we believe is a new segment of coffee and health, that people will eventually choose coffee based on the health benefits of coffee, and they should choose coffee based on its health benefits. Yeah. And we want to make sure that we're leading the charge in terms of what we're learning on a farm level.
That's amazing. And let me ask you this, you know, with pesticide usage, obviously we understand pesticides to keep away pests. What are some of the pests that you have to deal with in coffee, and how do you deal with that without the use of harmful pesticides?
Yeah, and there's a lot, and this is one of the bigger challenges in coffee. And you sort of highlighted an important point, which is that the coffee that's best for health is organic, regenerative agriculture coffee. It's farmed in its natural way. The problem is that the companies or individuals don't pay a premium for organic coffee. Not really. They pay, you know, 50 cents more, a dollar more, but there's not enough for the farmer. And the concern is that the farmer takes a big risk. And the reason there's a big risk is you can look at things like, you know, coffee rust or coffee berry beetle, where you've got some risks where the whole harvest will be wiped out if there's an infestation. So the risk that they're bearing about dealing this with this sort of infestation naturally is high, because you imagine a lot of these farmers, this is their only source of revenue. So the ability to feed their family is based on their ability to manage pests. We found, and we've been very lucky to find really good farmers who are experts in regenerative agriculture and some of the natural ways. I mean, the funny thing is, nature is just an incredibly powerful balanced system. Our problem occurs when we try and get in the way of nature and say that we're smarter than them, and we decide to put pesticides and herbicides on the plants, and that knocks things out of balance. So what we try and do is return naturally to the way that coffee, the natural sort of enemies of these beetles, we're encouraging those on our properties.
Oh, that's amazing. It's great that you're finding alternative methods, because obviously, you know, we understand a lot of the dangers of pesticides, widely used in agriculture, creates a lot of issues. You know, definitely can impact our health, especially individuals who have other underlying conditions and are extremely sensitive. Yeah. I've seen lab results clinically of people with glyphosate poisoning, you know. And so it's really important that, you know, we do look and source these types of things, and making sure that we're trying to buy organic when we can, and highlighting that problem that this is something that is affecting the farmers, I think is a critical problem to highlight, right? Because, you know, there's if we keep shortcutting the farmers, yeah, we're going to be shortcutting ourselves in the long run, right? Absolutely. And I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, we're encouraging them to take decisions which are not in the best interest of the finished product for us. And you know, I suppose the takeaway is for me is coffee has a huge impact on health, given the fact that you use it every single day. In most cases, you know, 164 million Americans will wake up tomorrow morning and drink a cup of coffee. And if you're going to do that every single day, then you want to make sure that the quality of your coffee is high, because it's not like a fish oil that you forget to take sometimes. You never forget to take a cup of coffee.
Right. Well, that just further highlights, you know, we're probably drinking more coffee than we are taking vitamins and things of that nature, right? So we can see just from the consistency of drinking coffee how much it affects us. I mean, I know for a fact I drink coffee every single morning. So really, really important to making sure that we're upgrading the coffee that we're drinking and learning more about the health benefits, learning more about the process, because education is going to allow us to make better decisions, right? I'm sure that... when you look at coffee, the cheaper box brands that are not doing things this way, yes, they're going to be price attractive, but you know, price attractive is not health attractive, right? And I think it's really about switching things up to making sure that we're doing everything that we can to be healthy. And that's really upgrading the quality of products that we're putting into our bodies. So thank you for all the work that you're doing there to kind of, you know, bring this industry forward. It's just an amazing thing. What's the future look like for you?
Well, it's an interesting point. See, I think that the real opportunity is what we can do on the farm level. I think we're at the first rung of the ladder. So let's go back, and we'll talk about mold in a second, about why I think it's a very, very low bar, and every coffee company should have a certificate that it's tested to be free of mold. That's one issue. But the second issue is that people aren't looking at coffee through the lens of health. And because they're not looking at it through that lens, they're not measuring things like the antioxidants, the chlorogenic acids. So what we're discovering on a farm level is we can improve the quality of coffee for health. And that's the next level. So there's one part of this, which is avoid the bad stuff. And that's mold, mycotoxins, heavy metals. But my frustration with this is that was something that we did in the first, let's say, month of research. Okay, obviously it's going to be organic. Obviously it needs to be mold-free and mycotoxin tested. They were very easy decisions. But what's amazing to me is that the industry hasn't changed their practices. So they started to see, you know, that the people are gravitating to this. They're understanding it's important that their coffee is mycotoxin and mold-free. What's crazy for me is they don't pay for this very small test and guarantee that the farmers are producing the coffee in the right way. You can test a container of coffee for $100 to make sure it's free of mold and mycotoxin. Let's stop having the conversation about whether there's mycotoxins and mold in coffee. Test for it, prove there isn't, and then move on. Every single coffee you buy should be tested to be mold and mycotoxin free. And let's start talking about what are the positive compounds in coffee that we want to maximize, and not the low bar. The low bar of just, you know, every consumer should be demanding that they have good, clean coffee.
And what does that look like, you know, from the U.S. standpoint? Is it as simple as a regulation requiring import of all coffee to be mycotoxin tested?
I think that would be a higher bar, but on a local level, I think if you could just get somebody, you know, a coffee company to say it is independently third-party tested to be free from mold and mycotoxins, that's it. And just have it available on your site. And, you know, you can go to our site and you can download all of the studies and the reports and all of the testing we do on our coffees. And it's pretty profound. But one of the most basic ones is that mold and mycotoxin testing. And it should be available. I mean, if you drink your coffee, and the way I sort of like to explain it with people is drink your coffee, and if you've got jitters, nervousness, cold sweat, that is not a reflection of coffee. That's a reflection of your coffee. Coffee shouldn't make you feel that way. I mean, it shouldn't. You should not get jitters. You should not feel nervousness. You should not feel that need when you've just drunk too much coffee and you're like, oh God, I've got to stop drinking coffee. That is a sign of poor quality coffee and you reacting to some of the negative compounds inside the coffee.
That is that fight or flight response, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Now, question for you, because you're getting into agriculture with coffee, right? It's definitely part of it. You know, have you seen other issues in and around this area that is inspiring you to make change in other aspects? You know, can we expect Purity to expand its offerings from coffee to other things in the future?
We like to be focused, and we're going to continue to be focused on coffee. You know, I think it's one of our one of the things I'm happiest about with the direction of the company is the there is so much opportunity in coffee by itself in terms of doing a lot of good, you know, just for the size of the market, the number of people who drink coffee. We could go in other directions, but we don't want to be focused on that sort of shiny penny. We want to focus on the deep well, which is coffee. And then there's a lot more that can be done around coffee. So the organic waste products that come from coffee, which right now are just basically thrown away, can be used to create energy like biochar. There's a number of things that can be done in terms of flowers like cascara that could come from the product of the coffee fruits. So there's a lot of directions we can go in without moving from coffee, but we're going to stay in coffee for a long while, I think.
That's awesome. Well, it's exciting to hear that, you know, within that coffee world, there's still a lot more good work that you guys can be doing. Yeah. Just circling back to, you know, you and your family and what you've been through, you know, do you have any clue as to the exposure, what kind of kicked this off, you know, for your wife? You know, were you being exposed on the road? Did you get exposed when you came back to the States at home? What was that exposure journey like that obviously prompted this inspiration to create a better world in coffee? And can you walk us through any of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, if I think back, it was very frustrating. It was obviously there's a lot of fear and a lot of frustration involved because no one could tell us what it was. They could tell us, you know, a shopping list of the type of things that could be happening both in our house. So we remediated our house and with the foods that we were eating. And so that was the first problem, just a very long list of things that we needed to do. And we did all of those things. And I don't want to sort of like make our coffee out like a panacea that it fixes all problems. But the coffee she was drinking was in K-cups. It was definitely low standard coffee. Mm. And it was definitely contributing to that. And so in the end, when we did all these different things and she switched, you know, her health improved over time, but it was a slow process. And, you know, I just think that, you know, your group of customers, patients, I mean, in a way, you're a little bit like the canary in the mine. It's like the mast cell and histamine. There's a group of people who are showing sensitivities to things that I think all of us are going to have issues with soon if we don't resolve some of this poor quality practices that are in the industry, not just in coffee, but in other areas as well.
Definitely. I mean, the White House just held their indoor air quality summit a couple of days ago, and they're appropriating more funds to indoor air quality than ever before. I mean, by comparison, the Biden administration, $122 billion. Yeah. Obama administration, $8 billion. So it's a pretty big breath here. You could see that the focus, especially with COVID really rearing its ugly head and showing us that something is so small that we can't see that can harm us, especially not only in our food supply and our air supply as well. This can be very problematic. And obviously we know that with how many people got sick and unfortunately passed, and to see them kind of jump in and realize and recognize the big issue, you know, I think is important, and creating that awareness is important. But like all things government, we just got to hope that they don't squander that and make sure that the regulations make sense and are sound.
Yeah. And I think we have to make local decisions. We have to make our own decisions with our wallet and encourage those sort of businesses that have those practices. I mean, when you mentioned COVID, I mean, just inflammation is becoming such a big lever that we can pull in terms of minimizing the inflammation we have in our bodies so that we're resilient if these sort of things happen. And I think that's why focusing on antioxidants and anti-inflammation is very important long-term. And, you know, obviously mold creates inflammation throughout your body. It's systemic. So it's a real issue.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is a real issue. And, you know, taking these small steps really lead to big results. And I think that's really important for people to know. I mean, switching your coffee to a mold and mycotoxin free coffee, and, you know, trying to limit your exposure to microplastics, drinking better water, breathing better air. I mean, these are all things that lead to better health. I mean, health is holistic. And so take small steps, we get big results. Where can people find your coffee? Where can people learn more about all the good things that you're doing and the things that you have that are going to continue to come from you guys?
Yeah, just go to our site, puritycoffee.com. We only sell direct to consumer online, typically through subscription. But, the reason we do that is because we feel like we want to educate people about coffee, about the things that matter when it comes to coffee and health. And there's just a lot of information there. And on a monthly basis, we're updating information about what we're doing on our farm and decisions that we're making so that our customers can sort of understand the dilemma when we're talking about, you know, these sort of soil conditions, and we've decided on one plot to use one sort of additive and another plot another. We want people and customers to be part of the journey in figuring out exactly what matters when it comes to coffee and health.
So. That's really amazing. So for folks, just to recap, you go to puritycoffee.com, learn all about the company and the amazing things that they're doing, as well as get your subscription so that this coffee will just show up to your door exactly when you need it.
And we'll give you a code as well. I'm not sure if anyone's done that yet, so that you can offer this to your customers so they get a deep discount to try it for the first time.
Well, that's awesome. I appreciate that. And I'm sure people listening will appreciate that as well. So for those listening right now, go on over to the show notes. And in the show notes, we'll have a coupon code where you can try Purity Coffee for the first time and get a discount.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for all that you're doing in the coffee world. As a coffee drinker myself, I greatly appreciate everything that you're doing, that's leading to better health here. Thanks so much for your time today to kind of share your personal story and how this company came to be about. And, you know, God bless you for all the amazing things that you're doing.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.